We will begin our service together this morning by singing hymn number 208. 208. O worship the King, all glorious above, and gratefully sing his power and his love. Our shield and defender, the Ancient of Days, pavilioned in splendor and girded with praise. Hymn 208. We're now going to sing hymn number 39, which is a paraphrase of the 23rd Psalm. The King of love my shepherd is, whose goodness fails me never. I nothing lack if I am his and he is mine forever. Hymn 39.
Thank you.
My dear brethren and sisters, on the 4th of July, our readings for the day were from the 1st of Samuel chapter 16. We're concerned with the anointing of David as king. Here we are a month later, reading about the end of his life. In 2 Samuel chapter 22, we have read with our brother Peter the song of David, and in tomorrow's chapter, we will be reading David's last words. Long after his death, David was cited by God as "my servant David, who kept my commandments and who followed me with all his heart to do only what was right in my eyes." And much later, of King Abijam, we are told that his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David, who did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, and had not turned aside from anything that he commanded him all the days of his life, except in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. So David's character became the yardstick for gauging the virtues of later kings. And David is referred to in 28 books of the Bible, including 9 New Testament books. Now, the opening verse of this second chapter, 22nd chapter, the second book of Samuel, the opening verse of this song of David dates the composition. If you read verse 1, "Then David spoke to the Lord the words of this song on the day when the Lord had delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul." And these words correspond with the title heading of Psalm 18, composed at the same time and almost identical in content to David's song, except for minor variations. So both the psalm and the song of David, they were composed at the same time. They belong to the early part of David's reign, when he was recently established on the throne of Israel to triumph over the house of Saul, which, as we know, was the setting for God's promise to David, which was when the Lord had given him rest from all his enemies all around. But just as David's exceptional character set the standard for later kings, so Psalm 18, reproduced in Samuel's historical account as the Song of David, at the conclusion of his life, we can see that the words fit every stage of David's life. So we read on at verse 2. "And he," David, "said, the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, the God of my strength, in whom I will trust, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold and my refuge, my Saviour. You save me from violence. I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies." Now, the personal nature of this opening declaration is obvious, isn't it? The repeated use of the personal pronouns "I" and "my" speak of the closeness of the relationship David enjoyed with his God. And the song of David ends on a similar note. If we move forward to verse 47, David says that the Lord lives. Blessed be my rock. Let God be exalted, the rock of my salvation. It is God who avenges me and subdues the peoples under me. He delivers me from my enemies. You also lift me up above those who rise against me. You have delivered me from the violent man. Therefore, I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the Gentiles, and sing praises to your name. He is the tower of salvation to his king, and shows mercy to his anointed, to David and his descendants thereafter, forevermore. So here was David, delivered from all his enemies, including his implacable adversary Saul, his kingdom enlarged and victorious, recognizing God's key role in achieving the result. David's not thinking about his own part in the process. He's not thinking about the prowess of his armies. Everything is attributed to God fighting his battles and shielding him from harm. It's interesting to find that the song of Moses, again addressed at the end of Moses' life, that song also refers to the same rock of salvation that stood firm throughout. Deuteronomy 32, "For I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock, his work is perfect." And in Psalm 31, David speaks again of the rock that underpinned his life. "In you, O Lord, I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in your righteousness. Bow down your ear to me. Deliver me speedily. Be my rock of refuge, a fortress of defense to save me. For you are my rock and my fortress. Therefore, for your name's sake, lead me and guide me." So at every turn in his eventful life, David saw God's unseen hand altering his affairs, protecting him from danger and bringing him victory over his enemies. So this really covers his humble beginnings as a shepherd, his exploits as a soldier and champion of God's cause, the period of his life when he was a fugitive, persecuted by King Saul, his finest years reigning as king at Hebron and later at Jerusalem, his great remorse over his sin involving Bathsheba. We know how he faced up to growing family troubles. And then, at the end, the care he took in preparing Solomon to take over from him. Many times, God paid tribute to David's quite exemplary qualities. For example, Psalm 78, "He, God, also chose David, his servant. He took him from the sheepfolds, from following the ewes that had young. He brought him to shepherd Jacob, his people, and Israel, his inheritance. So he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands." You know, at the beginning, David was called upon to appear before the prophet Samuel from keeping the sheep. As one writer states, these few sheep were David's charges. He knew them by name. He led them out and in. He found pasture and water for them. He bound up their wounds. He protected them with his own life against the onslaught of wild beasts, and he shared their life by night and day. He played his harp as he sat on the hill overlooking his flock and gazed abroad at the heaven's unfathomable beauty during the hours of darkness when the sheep lay near him for protection. This age-old occupation worked upon his character and developed in his mind a sense of responsibility and compassion for others, a love and devotion which remained with him to the end of his days. As an old man, looking upon the sufferings of his people, he was moved to say, "These sheep, what have they done?" David never lost his deep reverence for God, with whom he enjoyed a wonderfully intimate relationship. His living faith matured as his life developed, and as the intensity of his awareness of God increased, so did his confidence and his trust. For example, Psalm 23, we've just sung a paraphrase of that psalm. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." David's courage was evident when he volunteered to fight Goliath. King Saul thought that this raw youth would be no match for the Philistine. But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by the beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." And so, declining the protection of the king's own suit of armor, the shepherd boy chose instead those five smooth stones taken from the stream. And we are familiar with his defiant words addressed to Goliath. "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all the assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." And so that stone struck the giant on the forehead. David severs Goliath's head. with the giant's own sword, and the Philistines were routed. But Israel's champion credited that great victory to the God of Israel. As Psalm 144 begins, "Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle, my loving kindness and my fortress, my high tower and my deliverer, my shield and the one in whom I take refuge, who subdues my people under me." But David's triumph aroused Saul's jealousy, and David soon became a fugitive. And verses 5 to 7 of David's song seem to refer to the frustration and the very real danger of these fugitive years. Reading at verse 5, "When the waves of death surrounded me, the floods of ungodliness made me afraid. The sorrows of Sheol surrounded me, the snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called upon the Lord and cried out to my God. He heard my voice from his temple, and my cry entered his ears." In the Psalms, we are given insight into how David the fugitive felt. For example, Psalm 59 was written, we're told, when Saul sent his soldiers to kill David in his own house. David's wife Michal frustrated the plot, but David attests his innocence. The cry again, "Deliver me from mine enemies, O my God. Defend me from those that rise up against me. Deliver me from the workers of iniquity, and save me from bloodthirsty men. For look, they lie in wait for my life. The mighty gather against me, not for my transgression, nor for my sin, O Lord. They run and prepare themselves through no fault of mine." And in the midst of the crisis, who does David turn to? "I will sing of your power. Yes, I will sing aloud of your mercy in the morning. For you have been my defense and refuge in the day of my trouble. To you, O my strength, I will sing praises. For God is my defense, my God of mercy." In Psalm 142, David pleads for relief from his persecutors. And the heading of the psalm states that it was written when he was in the cave. "I cried out to you, O Lord. I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me." Similar words in this song of David, reading now from verse 17. "He sent from above, he took me. He drew me out of many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my support. He also brought me out into a broad place. He delivered me because he delighted in me." But when David found himself in a broad place, finally at rest from his enemies and richly blessed, that close relationship he enjoyed with God didn't change at all. Reading now at verse 36, this is very clear. Verse 36. You have also given me the shield of your salvation. Your gentleness has made me great. You enlarged my path under me, so my feet did not slip. What a wonderful expression that is. Your gentleness has made me great. New International Version, you stooped down to make me great. As effective as the still small voice compared with the thunder and the lightning that God is able to produce. So God's condescension, his concern for the individual, is really very humbling, isn't it? And Psalm 113 comes to mind. The Lord is high above all nations, his glory above the heavens. Who is like the Lord our God who dwells on high, who humbles himself to behold the things that are in the heavens and in the earth? The psalm continues, he raises the poor out of the dust and lifts the needy out of the ash heap, that he may seat him with princes, with the princes of the people. As has been pointed out, God condescends from his great holiness and physical separation to be involved with the ordinary affairs of men and women. David had learned to live with his God. Any righteousness that he had was attributed to him because he had learned through experience to walk within the limits God set, to receive the grace that God offered, and to see life through the divine perspective. For the believer, and that includes us, such an outlook is happiness. So I think the exhortation for us this morning is to be reassured, just like David, by the nearness of God in our own lives, and to be reassured by the salvation made possible through the work of Jesus. Paul encouraged the Philippians and us also to rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say, rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. We now move forward to the first book of Chronicles, chapter 29, to the end of David's life that we've briefly reviewed through his song of praise in the book of Samuel. We've traced the progress of the shepherd boy who rose from obscurity to reign for God on the throne of Israel. Having assembled materials for the construction of the temple to be built by his son Solomon, David, with the people, rejoices with great joy and praises God. And his words are a wonderful tribute to the shepherd king's consistently held view of God. And we note again his modesty in accepting that everything that he had, everything that he was, derived from his benefactor and guardian. First Book of Chronicles, chapter 29, reading at verse 10. Therefore, David blessed the Lord before the assembly, and David said, Blessed are you, Lord God of Israel, our Father, for ever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory, the victory and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head over all. Both riches and honour come from you, and you reign over all. In your hand is power and might. In your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. Now, therefore, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name. And who am I? And who are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this? For all things come from you, and of your own we have given you. For we are aliens and pilgrims before you, as were all our fathers. Our days on earth are as a shadow and without hope. So at the end, David considered that he was a pilgrim before God. That's our status as well, isn't it? And finally, we turn to Psalm 145. The last of the Psalms attributed to David. In fact, some Bibles carry the title David's Psalm of Psalms. And we will read at verse 14. Psalm 145 at verse 14. The Lord upholds all who fall and raises up all who are bowed down. The eyes of all look expectantly to you, and you give them their food in due season. You open your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing. The Lord is righteous in all his ways, gracious in all his works. The Lord is near to all who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. He will fulfill the desire of those who fear him. He also will hear their cry and save them. The Lord preserves all who love him, but all the wicked he will destroy. My mouth shall speak the praise of the Lord, and all flesh shall bless his holy name for ever and ever. We now sing as our Breaking of Bread hymn, hymn number 267. And with David recognizing that it's God's gentleness in our lives that can make us great, it is our prayer that that gentleness may be with us now. To quote the second verse, Shed on us here a holy peace. Gather us in thine arms of love. Cheer every sad and aching heart with thine own comfort from above. Hymn 267. Thank you. Brother Alan Wharton is going to give the final prayer. And we've chosen to sing hymn number 298, which is a prayer for those in need. And I think as we sing this hymn, our sister Rachel Jones will be in our thoughts. Also our sister Martha DePinto and those who are suffering bereavement at this time. And I'm sure there are many others where this special prayer has relevance to their lives. Holy Father, in thy mercy, hear our anxious prayer. Keep our loved ones now far absent 'neath thy care. Hymn 298.